My guests are with me this afternoon. I've got Chris Hopwood, who I don't exactly know your title. I know you were in marketing, Chris, aren't you, for the council?
That's right, yeah. I'm the marketing manager for the fostering service at Cambridgeshire County Council.
Okay, so we'll talk to you in a few minutes. And we also have Simon. Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Simon, you're actually a foster parent, I guess. Is that the best way to describe you, a foster parent?
Foster care.
Okay. So the subject, as we say, this afternoon, we're going to be talking about foster caring. Across the country, there are thousands of children who can't be looked after by their own family. This could be for illness or family breakdowns or because they have experienced some form of neglect. And so I thought it was a good idea if we asked Chris to come in and talk about what the County Council get up to in terms of foster caring. Because I guess the foster caring that goes on is not just restricted to the council, is it, Chris? In terms of an organisation, I mean.
That's right. I mean, people can foster with a number of agencies. I'm obviously here talking about what we offer within Cambridgeshire for Cambridgeshire County Council. We're obviously the local authority and we provide, we hear from our carers, a very good package, a very good support package that, you know, enables them to do what is obviously sometimes a very demanding job. But with good training and support that we offer, we like to think that they can really benefit from being foster carers.
So, simple question, what's involved in becoming a carer then?
Well, it is quite a long process. So we start from the point of people making an initial inquiry to us. And that's really what today is all about, really, is sort of getting out there to people and saying, if you're interested in becoming a foster carer, please get in touch with us. Initially, we just look for people who feel that they have space in their life and space in their home to make a difference to a local child or young person. People who foster come from all backgrounds, all walks of life, all age groups. We have a lot of foster carers who have parented themselves or are currently parenting young children themselves. But we do also have lots of foster carers who haven't parented their own children. We have foster carers whose experience perhaps is more within their professional careers. So caring professions, teaching and other backgrounds that involve working with children. We have people who are married, we have single people also who foster, we have people in civil partnerships and same-sex marriages who are foster carers for us. Some of those groups don't always think that they're eligible to foster, so we're really keen to always make sure that the message is out there that if they feel they'd like to, then we would really like to hear from them.
Okay, I've got a few questions, as you can imagine. One of the questions, I guess, that most people will be thinking is, oh, hang on a second, you know, we're a family, we've got three kids ourselves, we've only got one spare bedroom, I work all day, my husband works all day. Are we really the kind of people that you're looking for?
Well, I mean, there's a few things there. First of all, if you've got children of your own, that's absolutely fine. Having a spare bedroom is really crucial. You can foster if you don't have a spare room, but you can only foster very young babies. But we, as a general rule, we say if you've got a spare bedroom, then we're very keen to hear from you. I mean, we obviously always look at people's circumstances and the amount of time and flexibility they have to offer the role. So it's absolutely fine for people to be working if you're in a couple and you both work, but you have some flexibility, which would allow you, as any parent would need, some flexibility to work around the child and their needs, then that's something that we really look at and we're always really keen to talk about.
Sorry, go on.
No, and the only other thing I was going to say was, obviously, when families have their own children living at home, we look very carefully at the ages of the children that they have.
I was just going to ask you that question, actually.
And we look very carefully at placing children around those age groups to make the best match possible for everybody.
Okay, so that is exactly the question I was going to ask you next. And so if you have children that are under 10, let's say, then you presumably look to match that with a child, a foster child who is of a similar age.
No, it would usually be a child that's younger, or significantly older, depending on the experience of the carers and what they were offering. As a general rule, it's often that the child that is fostered is younger than the youngest child in the family. But as I say, it's not always the case. Sometimes it can be an older child if the family offering a particularly sort of skilled background in working with slightly older children, for example.
And again, in terms of gender, if the existing family is, let's say, all girls, would you consider bringing a male foster child in, or would it always be a female foster child?
It wouldn't necessarily always need to be. it very much is a case-by-case basis and what's an appropriate match for the child. And it's also very much on the foster carer's preference as well. Our foster carers are able to state their preference on age groups of children, the types of placement they feel they're able to take, etc. So we would work very much around that, and we'd find the best match possible for that family and for the child.
Give me some sort of idea. Simon, maybe I can ask you this question. You are currently a foster carer.
That's right.
How long have you been a foster carer for?
For 3 years and one day, actually. Specifically 3 years and one day, because last night we celebrated 3 years since our permanently placed child came to live with us.
Oh, right. And you say permanently placed, so that child that came 3 years ago is still with you now, then?
That's right, he'll be with us until he's independent. And potentially beyond, who knows?
what caused you to want to do that? I mean, are you a very altruistic type of person?
I think there's something to that. Yeah, I think there's two things for me. The first is that I'm a Christian, and there was something about fostering inside of me that I feel was, a result of my faith, I suppose, that I felt I needed to think about more. And there was another aspect, which was that I used to be a police officer, and I found myself in situations far too many times when I'm seeing children who have been abused or neglected. And you look at those circumstances, and in fact, as a police officer, something you find yourself involved in is potentially removing children on an emergency basis. And doing that and seeing it and understanding firsthand what the needs of some of those children were, I knew I needed to be more involved in the next steps of the process, not just being involved in that initial stage of removing children and dealing with the emergency of the abuse or neglect, but actually beyond that, being part of the future for those children.
Now, I guess, I assume you have a partner, yeah?
That's right, I'm married, yeah.
Okay. Did it take you long to... I mean, how did that go before you actually got to the point of saying, yes, we're going to do this?
To be honest, we kind of knew from a young age that this is something we wanted to do. We'd always planned to have birth children first, and we did that. We have two birth children. And kind of during the process of having those birth children, we were very aware that at some point we would stop having birth children and we would look to foster as in addition to having those children.
And roughly how old were your children when you took on board the foster
child?
When
I started, I'd have to do some maths. Right now I've got a 4-year-old girl, a 6-year-old boy and a 10-year-old foster child.
Okay, and what was their reaction when this dare I say it, foreign child came into the group?
Yeah, well, I guess we started early enough that our children don't really remember life before he arrived.
Oh, really?
More recently, yeah. Though, we took on a 5-year-old child, a young boy who needed temporary care, and we looked after him for 6 months and said goodbye to him around 3 weeks ago when he was able to return to be with some family members. And it was interesting seeing him arrive, because obviously all of the children, including the foster child actually, who's permanently placed with us, even he was taking on the role of fostering. So it was really interesting to see the change in dynamic for him, because all of a sudden he'd kind of become part of this fostering household as a carer, almost more than just as a child entering someone else's family himself.
Okay, so people listening at home right now, I guess some of the questions they may be saying is, well, you know, I hear Simon tell me how it went for them, but you know, what would it be like for me? So tell me some of the good things and the bad things about fostering a child then.
I think some of the best things are seeing how children develop. And it can be really, really small things that are really, really significant. My foster child, who's 10, he's got some learning needs. And so for him, little tiny steps like learning to tie his tie, they're really significant things that you know, bring a tear to your eye when he achieves them. Even though it may seem, it's a crazy thing to be emotional about, but actually you see these changes in children and you think, I actually have contributed to that. I think it's also very realistic that you need to think about the fact that fostering, it's very raw emotionally. You know, you can be saying goodbye to children that have lived with you for months or years. And I guess, you need to learn this sense that loving a child means loving what's best, wanting what's best for them, not necessarily what you naturally would want to happen. So, I guess it's an expression of love sometimes when you make a decision to say, I'm going to make sure this ending for this child works really well as they move on to something that is right for them.
And I guess when you get to that point where you, as it were, give up that child and they move on with their lives and so forth, that must be a very difficult time you know, in a funny sort of way, I sort of related to having a pet, that you've had a pet perhaps for many, many years, and the pet eventually dies, and then you would think to yourself, do I really want to go through all that trauma again of having another pet and so on? And I would liken that to having a child, that you've had all those wonderful moments, but it comes to an end eventually, and then you think to yourself, the heartache, because there must be some.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I would liken it to when an older child perhaps leaves and goes off to university, and a parent might say, oh no, you've got to stay at home, I need you at home, you're mine, be here. But actually no, what a loving parent does is say, actually you need this development, this is the right thing for you, and so I'm going to, you know, let you go and live that life. And that's, I think, part of what loving foster children is about, is this idea that yes, it's naturally a case that a lot of the time you'd want a child to stay, but actually letting them go and letting that ending be positive for them as they move on to the next stage in their life, if that is what happens for the child, that's part of it too.
Chris, if I could just come back to you a second there. In terms of becoming a foster parent, what kind of things do people have to do? You know, you've explained about how they have to approach you in the first place. Mm-hmm. Once they've approached you, and I guess you go and vet them, that's presumably the first thing you do, is it?
We do what we call an initial visit. So basically, people come forward to us, we give them some basic information. If that basic information appeals to them and they think that they'd like to go forward, we go and visit them at home. So it's one of our recruitment workers goes and talks to the people. If it's a couple, it's both members of the family, other people in the household as well, who are going to be part of the application process. From that stage, if people are keen to go ahead and we think they've got real potential and that the fostering task is going to be right for them, then we go through to the Skills to Foster training course. That's a national standards training course which we run locally in Cambridgeshire for County Council foster carers. And that training course is over a number of weekends and evenings, and it covers a few months' worth of time, in between which people do home study and complete worksheets, etc., to take along to the next session. Our foster carers find that a really, really useful period of time. They get to meet existing foster carers, they come along, they get to meet looked after children, so the kind of children that they might be looking after in the future. They get to talk to children of existing foster carers to see what the impact is on them and their experiences of being in a fostering household. So it's a really wide-ranging period of time. They obviously also get to know some of the social work staff that they're going to be working with in the future. Once that's completed, they do an application as well, so it's like a formal application form to become foster carers. Once all of that's completed, you go to fostering panel, which is an independent panel of people who talk to all of our potential foster carers, and then an assessment is made as to whether or not those people should go ahead and foster. Very often, by the time people are at that stage, they are then approved to become foster carers. And from that point on, some people are fostering immediately. In most cases, people are fostering very quickly from that point forward. And then they're part of the fostering team. That isn't the end of their training. We're continually training our foster carers. We put on a wide range of courses across the year that foster carers attend, and they keep attending and keep updating their skills and their experiences. And they have regular supervision with our social workers. They have 24/7 support on the end of the phone if they need help with anything. If there's any queries at all, we're always there to help them. We have mentoring arrangements as well, so new foster carers have a mentor who's a more experienced foster carer who they work alongside. We do things like support groups as well, which are there for foster carers to meet up.
Because I guess that one of the main things there, and again, perhaps Simon might be able to enlighten us on that, is that especially for somebody who's becoming a foster carer for the first time, it's a bit like pushing a boat out into the ocean, isn't it? You know, you've read about it and whatever, but now you're doing it, and that's the scary bit, because I guess even as a parent, you're learning all the way as to bringing your own children up. Never mind bringing somebody else's children up. So one of the things, I guess, and you've said it yourself there, is that it's very important to have a lot of support around you that you can call upon, really. Simon, would you agree?
Absolutely. Your support network is key to assisting you in the task of fostering and making sure that you have what you need available around you to complete the task. I would say that fostering agencies are very good at assessing what kind of needs a foster carer might have, what kind of support they might have, and what would work for them. Obviously, it's new to every foster carer when they take on the task for the first time, but it's not new to a fostering agency. So they'll look at what kind of fostering would be best for you to start with, how they can introduce you to the idea of fostering, meeting other carers, meeting children, and introduce you to it in a way that makes it not daunting.
Mm. Chris, if we can just come back to you a second. We've so far talked about people who foster care on a permanent basis, but there is another way you can become a foster carer, isn't there?
There is, yes. I mean, in general, there are lots of different types of fostering. As you say, we've been talking about people who foster on a full-time basis, but we are also recruiting carers at the moment who can offer respite care to look after children. They would go through exactly the same recruitment and assessment process as our full-time foster carers, but what they offer is somewhere for children to stay on a short-term basis when their permanent full-time carers need a break for whatever reason that might be. And that's something that we look for a lot for, you know, to really support the carers who are doing the job on a full-time basis. Obviously, there are times when they need breaks. They might have situations in their own family, for example, when they need a bit of time out to pay attention and give time to that. So our respite carers step in at that point. And that's a role that can really suit, as you mentioned before, those very busy households, those people who are working perhaps in a couple, both working full time. And it's also, for some people, perhaps a good way for them to have a go at fostering, if you like, you know, to see if it's right for them.
Toe in the water kind of thing.
And then they can build it up and perhaps become full time foster carers in future. So those are our respite carers. We also in Cambridgeshire have the Family Link service. Again, those carers are respite carers. They look after disabled children on a part-time basis, either a night in the week or a couple of nights at the weekend. And what they do is offer support to families who have a disabled child within the family. So the children are living with their birth families, but those families need respite from caring for the children who often do have very complex needs. And the people who are fulfilling the roles of link carers for us will tend to have very specific skills and experience of working with disabled children in caring roles, teaching assistant roles perhaps in schools, where they've worked with children who have those range of additional needs and disabilities. So there's those two types of respite care. The other type of fostering, which is slightly different from mainstream fostering, is supported lodgings. And our supported lodgings carers offer very specific service to older young people, preparing them for independence. And often those children and young people will live slightly more independently within a home, often within perhaps an annex or a home that's attached to the carer's main home. And the carer offers them all of the things that you would need any young person to sort of work through and get used to before they are fully independent. And that's another role that can suit some people who perhaps, for whatever reason, aren't considering doing full-time fostering with younger children.
So is that something, all of those different variations of foster caring, is that something that you would sit down with somebody, I don't know, like yourself perhaps, or some sort of mentor, and have that discussion initially and say, well, you know, I'm not really sure, let's just try it out, as you were explaining a minute ago, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that often happens. So often when people phone us up or complete our initial inquiry form online, they have very limited knowledge of fostering. They just know that they want to work with children, they want to work with young people, they want to make a difference, and that, you know, they want to open their home to them. So with those people, one of the first things that we do when we speak to them on the phone or when we visit them at home is look at exactly what skills they have, what availability they have, flexibility, etc. So yes, that's often at that point when we would decide together what type of fostering best suits them. But sometimes people do come to us knowing a little bit more about the different types of fostering that we have, and then ask specifically for that particular type of fostering.
Okay, some of the practical issues involved in sort of being a foster carer, things like household budgets and feeding the extra child, or when you have a family holiday, that sort of stuff. How does all that happen? What happens there?
Well, we offer allowances to help support raising the child and looking after the fostered child. So our carers do receive that financial support. Our carers also, as I've mentioned, do their regular training and development. And as carers do that, they move up what we call our skills levels. And with that comes additional payments as we recognise the additional skills that the carers are learning.
So generally speaking, looking after an extra child wouldn't mean that you would be out of pocket by having to provide things like food and clothing and things like that?
No, that's right. That would be covered. That would be covered in the allowances that we pay.
Right, OK. Simon, again, from your point of view, on a practical sense, have you had to get a bigger car or anything like that to accommodate your extra family?
Personally, we have gone for a bigger car option. We drive a 9-seat minibus.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just as much about taking our extra wider family members around. We've got a lot of local family as it is about fostering. We tow a caravan with it as well, so having a big one helps. But I think you know, the important thing is that a fostering agency would support any carer with a situation where it you know, if you were a 5-person family and you were taking on another child, that's the sort of thing that would be assessed as part of the fostering assessment, so that there wasn't a big financial burden around changing vehicles and things like that. So it's something that fostering agencies will look at and support carers with very well.
All of the conversation we've had so far is on the very positive. There must be a downside to it sometimes, I guess. If things go wrong, if you perhaps don't get on with the child, or you have some sort of trauma in your family where somebody falls seriously ill or something like that, how are all those sorts of situations coped with, Chris?
Well, I think in the first instance, we always try and place children as best we can in the best possible placement. Placement breakdowns, you know, is the one thing that we all try and avoid at all possible costs, because obviously that has a huge impact on the child first and foremost, but also the foster carer and their family. So we acknowledge how important it is that we try and avoid those as much as we can. So the first instance is very much looking at putting the right child in the right family, making sure that everybody involved is on board with that, knows what to expect as much as possible, and that we can make that work as best we can. But yes, obviously, occasionally there are unforeseen circumstances. And again, I think it's a case that we put the support in when we can. If children do move from placement to placement, we obviously manage that as effectively as we can. And then work with the foster carers if there's additional training or support that they need to prevent perhaps that happening again, or to gain their confidence, then obviously we look at that. But within Cambridgeshire County Council, we're very proud that we have a relatively low rate of placement breakdowns. We feel like our foster carers usually feel very happy with the placements that they have. So that's kind of an area that we feel we're very strong on and we feel very confident about.
When I started at the very beginning, I mentioned briefly about the fact that across the country there are thousands of children in foster care. Give us some sort of idea, if you can, as to the size of the foster caring requirement in the Cambridgeshire area, if you can.
Within Cambridgeshire, we usually have over 500 children who are in care at any one time. That number does fluctuate. It can be slightly higher, but usually it's around that number. Not all of those children require foster carers. So some of them are in kinship placements, for example, so they've been looked after by friends or family members. Some of them are in residential care, and that's sort of, in some cases, the most appropriate care for them. And then obviously a number are with Cambridgeshire County Council foster carers. Some are in placements with other agencies, and some are in placements in other parts of the country. Very few are without, you know, outside of Cambridgeshire, but some are. But we definitely look in the first instance, if a child does need a foster care placement, then look within Cambridgeshire County Council and our local foster carers.
And one of the reasons, to be honest, that we asked you to come in today and talk about this is because you are in a situation where you're looking for more foster carers. So roughly, how many ideally would you like to sign up to become foster carer?
This year, I think our target was around 45 new foster carers in Cambridgeshire. Obviously, you know, anything we can do above that would be fantastic. One of the reasons we're looking for more people is to basically have the widest range of placements available to the children and young people.
So you get a good match.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So to try and help those matches. So we look at for example, where people are based within the county, because often people's geographical location can rule them in or out with a particular placement. Within Cambridge City itself and the villages surrounding Cambridge, it's the lowest number of foster carers that we have anywhere in the county. So we're particularly keen to reach people in this local area, because that's where our greatest need for recruiting carers is.
Now, we talked, and Simon certainly helped us with that, in terms of the sort of profile of your typical foster carer. Simon, I guess you're probably, what, in your 30s, maybe, something like that?
I'm 29.
Oh, 29, there you go. So what is a typical age range? I mean, is there an upper age limit where you wouldn't really consider having a foster carer?
There isn't an upper age limit, no. What we look at with all of our applicants for fostering are people's abilities to provide appropriate care to children and young people. If people are fit, well, healthy, then we absolutely would consider their applications. Obviously, again, it's about matching appropriate children and young people to the appropriate age groups of carers. On the lower age limit, 21 is the youngest that you can be to apply to be a foster carer.
Okay, and just to re-emphasise, because time's very tight now, to re-emphasise, you can be either single or married, you can either have a family or not have a family, you can either be a homeowner or not a homeowner, you can be a single-sex couple, or indeed you can be just a straightforward partnership. Any of those things are applicable. And very briefly, Chris, if you could just tell us, what's the best way to get in contact with the council?
Our phone number, for anyone who wants to find out any more information, is 0800 052 0078, and the web address is cambridgeshire.gov.uk/fostering.
Brilliant. Listen, thanks ever so much for coming in, both to you, Simon, and to you, Chris. Hopefully, if you've thought about becoming a foster carer, that has helped you in doing so. We'll put some information on our website about that, and I'll get some information off Chris and Simon to talk about a bit later on. Chris and Simon, thanks very much for coming in. So once again, thanks very much to Chris and to Simon from the fostering service there coming in. Once again, I'll give you the information of how you can get in contact with the council if fostering is something that you are interested in doing. It's a free telephone number, 0800 052 0078, or you can visit the website www.cambridgeshire.gov.uk/fostering to get more information. Right, it's...